I was at a point in high school, my senior year of high school, man, where I was so bummed out that I literally contemplated shooting up a school. But I was so fucking depressed and so mad at the fact that life wasn't going my way. I couldn't get chicks. I had acne all over my face. That should tell you a little bit of the intensity of the temper I had.
Hey guys, JP here. The wolf is in the house, in the wolf's den, right? Got an awesome guest today, and I think you're going to really like this because this particular man, not a celebrity, but has become really successful by just work ethic, by sheer force of will, by stick-to-itiveness, and I know that there's a strategy behind it because there always is. So I want to get that strategy from this man, Omar El Attar. Omar, how are you?
Thanks so much for being on the show,
and
man.
And also thank find out more me. About you and you know, your life and the whole story. So listen, first of all, so basically your business podcast, right?
Yes, sir.
Tell me what you do.
So basically I help people build successful podcasts through courses, trainings, and workshops around the world.
Okay.
So it's been really awesome because I started it, like you mentioned, totally broke, regular dude. And I was actually down and out and had a mentor tell me, well, if life was perfect, what would you do? And so I went about 2.5-3 years ago, rock bottom, girlfriend broke up with me, totally broke, $30,000 in debt.
I bet she's a sorry now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The best revenge is living well, right?
That's right.
And see, you heard it from me. What was her name?
Her name was Emily.
Emily, yeah. Look at you now, Emily. Okay, here you
go. And went ahead and she was a fan of three big things. It was Grant Cardone because she was in sales. And yourself, and she also was a fan of Hot Cheetos and Quest bars. So I went about and just wung my way into networking with the billion-dollar creator of Quest bars, billion-dollar creator of Hot Cheetos, and Grant Cardone. Got interviews with all of them, and they ended up being one of the most watched interviews with all of them on the planet.
What's this hot? I'm like a little bit out of the loop here, right? Mm-hmm. Explain the Cheetos thing. What is the hot Cheetos? So it's like Cheetos that are hot, like spicy Cheetos.
Yeah, like Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Really?
And they're actually they're the best selling snack product in the country.
Is that just me? I'm a guy. Am I crazy? So I'm the only guy in the world that doesn't know about hot Cheetos. That's a sad reality.
Right? Yeah, and actually the story's fascinating because the janitor was making $3 an hour, and he was the janitor at Frito-Lay.
Okay.
And he cold called the CEO one day. Out of just divine inspiration, was like, man, I'm, can I cuss on the show?
Yeah.
So he was just like, man, fuck this. Like, my life sucks. And I want to do big things. And him and his wife were totally broke. And so they had this idea, because he was Mexican, what if I put spice on the Cheeto? And so he just called the CEO, and he was relentless at pitching the executives as a janitor. They ended up giving him a shot, finally got to pitch, and they released it in test markets. And from then, I think it was the 80s until today, it's the best-selling product that Frito-Lay has on the planet.
Really? Hot Cheeto. There you go. Yeah.
Hot Cheeto.
I like hot food too. It's funny. I don't really, I'm not much of a, I'm not really a snack food guy. I'm more like ice cream and stuff like that.
You're an indulger guy.
Yeah. Like that. All right. So you're that person. Grant was on your show, right? But so in other words, who was your mentor though?
Yeah, actually. So I had two coaches, but one guy was by the name of Dave Thorpe. His name was Dave Thorpe. He lives in Laguna. He's built some successful businesses himself. Okay. And at the time, I was at rock bottom, and I got in touch with him one day, and I was working at Tesla at the time, and just really unfulfilled, you know what I mean? I'm sure you can relate, where you're making a bunch of money, but you're just not fulfilled inside. By other people's standards, you're doing well, but you want to do more with your life. And this coach just talked to me, said, well, if life was perfect, what would you do? And I said, well, I would start a podcast. I didn't even say podcast. I said I would spend my time connecting with amazing people, inspire millions of people around the world, and make millions of dollars doing it. Hmm. And at the time, I didn't know that it would be a podcast and teaching others and the power of the internet with courses, which as well with your awesome, Straight Line Persuasion program. But, I didn't know any of that when I started. And so little by little, I just took these steps, got these interviews, got major exposure, started helping people, and then built a business around it. So it's a pretty wild journey.
When you say you hit rock bottom, though, define rock bottom for you.
Yeah, man. So rock bottom for me, I was actually abusing a lot of substances.
Really?
Smoking a lot
of
pot.
Tell me which ones. I got to get a vicarious.
You got a mutual journey.
Which ones did you abuse?
To be honest, it was mostly alcohol. So I experimented with a lot of stuff, but alcohol was my biggest issue, man.
Okay.
It got to the point where I would have, literally I was so bummed out. And my girlfriend at that time, Emily, which now shout out Emily. How you like me now?
Yeah, right? Emily's on Skid Row right now.
But, yeah. And
you've seen better days too. Anyway.
And yeah, just at the time, man, I was at rock bottom because I was like, I was unfulfilled. I was gaining weight. I was abusing substances, and I wasn't happy inside. I was borderline suicidal, majorly in debt, about $30,000 in debt, which at the time I was 21. So for me, that was a lot at the time.
That's a lot for 21,
yeah. And just got out of college. My parents were like, what are you doing with your life? Here I am trying to start a podcast, right? Now, a lot of people know about podcasts and the power of it.
Mm-hmm.
That time, not a lot of people did. And like you said, I was a nobody.
Right.
And so, man, I just got into a little bit of law of attraction and just put in the work, you know, because you could set a goal. But I set a goal and I put in the work, man. And I went from literally driving around depressed. I would have like a cooler. Literally, I would have a cooler. I'd be smoking a joint, have a cooler of beer in my car, and just be drinking beers driving, just bummed, depressed, crying. I don't know if you've had, you know, moments like that. I'm sure you've had your rock bottoms too.
On August 9th, if you can't stand the heat, get out of Hell's Kitchen. The Kitchen flips the mob genre on its head in a gritty, fast-paced drama featuring Melissa McCarthy, Tiffany Haddish, and Elizabeth Moss like you've never seen them before. After their husbands are arrested by the FBI, the women take over the family business amid the savage atmosphere of 1970s Hell's Kitchen, New York City. They quickly gain power within the criminal underworld, surpassing the ranks of the men to run the neighborhood. When their husbands are released from prison, the mob wives refuse to relinquish their newfound authority as the most ruthless and powerful gangsters in Hell's Kitchen. Don't miss this hardened, uncompromising thriller that's packed with darkness, action, and attitude. The Kitchen. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent. Directed by Andrea Berloff. Only in theaters August 9th.
This episode is brought to you by Xerox. Today's Xerox is all about enabling the era of intelligent work. From industry-leading hardware and software solutions to workflow automation and new innovations, like 3D printing and hyperspectral imaging. We're not just thinking about the future. We're making it. Learn more at Xerox.com/made-to-think.
Let me ask you a question. So, okay, so I get it. So what did you, like, were you the sort of guy, you said you worked at Tesla, what did you do at Tesla? You were sales?
Sales.
Sales, right.
Sales.
So when you went into this, so were you making money and not fulfilled? I mean, okay, so were you making a little bit of money? Like, how much were you making at Tesla?
Yeah, so I thought it was a lot of money, but how it was much? Like 120 grand.
Okay, right. So,
Which at the time I thought was money, but, you know, that's what, you know, we could do in a fraction of the time.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So you're making 120 grand a year, right? Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like uninspired by working there, right?
Yeah, because you're just another, you weren't helping people, man. And the pressure from corporate. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Tesla. Shout out Elon. But it was just rinse and repeat. There was no personal fulfillment in it. You know what I mean?
You basically had no career growth within Tesla.
Yeah, so and speak, right? Everybody's goal is just to be the bigger manager, the higher up, move up in the ranks, and just for me, it just wasn't enough, you know.
Okay, so you got into debt just from basically living a good life. You weren't like bust out on the street per se. You're a salesman, right? So you had to go to make some money, right?
Right. So I always sold. I did door to door sales, and to be honest, studied a lot of your material, man. Mm-hmm. Your material was super duper helpful, and. Awesome. So yeah, I did sales. I did door-to-door sales. I mean, everything you could think of. Because I hated I hated the traditional 9-to-5 that wasn't fulfilling. And, you know, just like you, you probably saw, man, like if I want to take control of my life, I got to earn my way there. You know, a lot of times you can't just earn your dreams if you're just kind of set and can't go for more. So did a bunch of sales jobs at Tesla, you know, was making money. But I was okay financially. But when I left Tesla to start the podcast, that's when I went into debt.
Got it.
So that's when I went into debt and hit rock bottom. And then my girlfriend left me. I was jobless in debt. My life was at that time absolute shit. At least I thought it was.
So what year was that? Was 3 years ago?
That was 2000 and end of 2015, early 2016.
Okay, yeah. So 3-4 years ago. Okay. And so the idea with the podcast when you first started was was what? You started to I'm not an expert at pod. I just do it because it's fun and I like speaking to interesting people, right?
Thank you.
But like, I don't look at podcasting as really a way to make a lot of money, even with advertising. Even like someone like Joe Rogan, who's like a huge podcast, right? I love him, right? Great podcast. You don't make that much money on it. It's a few million dollars. It's like, not like a huge money. It's like Howard Stern gets made like $50 million a year on radio, right?
Serious XM.
But it's really more about what you can do with the audience and viewership, right? You can connect with people.
That's right.
You can build your brand from a podcast. Was that sort of why you went into podcasting, or did you actually go into it for a profit center?
No, to be honest, the profit thing didn't even come up till probably about a year in. To be honest, I went into it. I knew I could make some money, so I knew I could, you know, figure out how to supplement the Tesla thing or whatever. But to me, honestly, I was just so burned out that I was just like, man, fuck this. I just wanted to do something.
That was exciting, right?
Yeah, literally, I was like, man, fuck this. I remember I was smoking a joint one day. I can mention that, obviously.
You can mention anything on this podcast.
But yeah, it was
except like things like about, you know, things that are really, you know, fucked up. Like, you know, like don't go near the pedophilia. That's
No.
I have certain lines even I fucking, but there's not many of them.
So, at the time I was smoking a joint and I remember I was like, after this joint, I'm going to change my life. And I wrote down all these people. And actually, you're one of the people that was on that list. I just looked at that paper today. But I just wrote down all these people, you know, and later I would end up, you know, I'm going to be connecting with Tony in August, invited me to fly out, connected with him, Grant Cardone, all these people. But I just wrote down this list of all these people. If life was perfect, I would connect with them. I would inspire the world telling their story. So for me, I knew that money would come, but I was more concerned with being the random dude who just sought out greatness and, just ended up showing people that, hey, I'm just a regular dude. I didn't have to do any of these incredible things to start.
Right.
Give myself permission to go out there and reach an inspired
people. So you wrote out this somewhat, was it a vision statement? Like, yeah. Where did you see your life
prophecy.
In 3 to 5 years from now, right?
Yeah, it's called The Passionate Few Prophecy. Yeah. The name of the podcast is The Passionate
What's
Few.
What's it called? The Passionate?
The Passionate Few.
The Passionate Few, okay.
Yeah.
So you wrote this thing out. How long was it?
It's about maybe 5-6 pages.
Okay.
5-6 pages. I just
very detailed.
Yeah. I see myself inspiring millions of people, interviewing people like this, making millions of dollars. I see myself creating the free time, the impact, reaching people all over the world, encouraging them to go for their dreams, asking the questions that people really care about. And the pain of that, of being in a rock bottom, I just channeled it all into it and ended up, you know, producing some incredible results.
And how about the why? Like, you know, did you have in there why you wanted to do it?
Absolutely. I wanted to prove to my ex, like, you don't want my time? Well, fucking let's see who wants my time. So how do you like me now?
Revenge.
Yeah.
It's like a common theme on this show, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had some other guy here last week. This guy, his name's Marmani, and I asked him one question. He went fucking apeshit for like 15 minutes about the people he wants to get back at once he's rich.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you had that too, right? A lot of people you want to prove wrong.
I really didn't. I didn't, actually. Believe it or not. I think I was in the unique position of being guilty for my crimes. So like I kind of got what I deserved.
Right.
So I never felt like I wanted to prove to myself and to my children that I can go out and, you know, be successful, do things the right way and live a great life. But it was never about getting back at people. I figured like I had done enough of getting to people. So I didn't really, that wasn't, but I understand that, you know, everyone has a different experience,
right.
You know? And I think there's power in both sides of the equation. There's power in wanting revenge, meaning not revenge physical, but the best revenge is living well.
Right.
So people know you're doing great. That obviously, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I'm glad that happened to me, but it wasn't my motivator. My motivator was really about my children and about also showing myself that I could take the skill sets that I was blessed with and that I'd honed to near perfection and take those and not cut any corners and build a really amazing business and empower people. That was my journey. But but there's lots of different journeys. There's no right or wrong, right?
Yeah. You know? And I think the common denominator there is just a compelling reason that's bigger than yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For you, it was family. For you, it was legacy.
So, you know, I think that while you said, you know, you didn't have an extraordinary life, and I don't really think that's true. I think in some level, if you dig into someone's life, every life is extraordinary. I really believe that. I really do.
In retrospect, I do. But nowadays, like so many of us compare ourselves to what's going on out there, forget to appreciate the blessings in front of you. So, yeah.
I'm just laughing. I mean, I'm just laughing. Thinking back, my wife always, like, you know, kids around me, and she says, like, you know, I was the kid that, like, you know, I couldn't shut up in class.
Really? So your whole life you were just having a blast in class?
No, I was just like, you know, I couldn't contain my own ability to speak. I always like to talk, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, as far back as I can remember, I was always like sort of the class, the person that would like sort of, you know, offer their opinion if even the teacher didn't want it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I get that. So let me ask you another question now. So like you said that like it's like revenge. I think if you
initially it was.
What's really like, I mean, like, you know, for, I'll tell you, for me, honestly, can I be honest with you?
Absolutely.
It's pussy. Mm-hmm. That's what it, I love, beautiful girls. Mm-hmm. From the time I was like 7 years old, mm-hmm. all right, I always liked girls. I mean, I can almost trace back every mistake I've made to the pursuit of a girl.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah,
from the time I was like in grade, I have a scar over my eye here from when I was like flirting with some girl in nursery, and we were playing some chase game, and I ran through some bushes to impress her. I didn't realize there was a brick wall on the other end. I fucking ran into a brick wall, got 16 stitches in my head, right?
No way. Whatever it took, huh?
Yeah. And then it was the same thing this right through my adulthood, through a few divorces and disasters. But like, that was my I just love girls, right? Yeah. And finally now, I have one in my life who I love to death. I'm with her for 11 years.
Man, awesome.
And I've broken, I have my compulsion directed towards one human being, and it's much better. But but I'm older now. I'm old. You're young, right? So the question, what is that how much of this is it about for you getting laid, hot girls? Is it about wealth for wealth's sake? Mm-hmm. Is it about, like, on some, I know it sounds good, like I like to contribute and give back and serve.
Yeah, I'm with you.
A lot of that's a bunch of bullshit. I think most people are full of shit when they say that. It's like, and it's a Tony Robbins line. I want to serve. I want to do this. And I believe Tony's genuine. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's not. I'm saying many people aren't, though.
Yeah, and they emulate that. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, you know, Tony has a certain language he uses. Serve. It's very certain, that whole, like, you know, the highest level of this is to serve. You know? I think 90% is complete and utter bullshit. I think most people are fucking, not that's greedy. They want to get rich. They have personal aspirations. They want nice things. And I'm saying it. I love nice shit.
Yeah.
I would not do this for free.
Right.
I would not sell my courses for free. I love nice. That being said, I would never try to make more money than I give in value. Mm-hmm.
You'd never be unethical about it. Yeah.
No, not again. No, I wouldn't make the mistake again. But I love nice shit, and I do it because I love to live a great life. I love taking care of my family, but, you know, what's the real deal with you? Like,
yeah, man. So in the beginning, so I'm sure you know this too, motivations evolve.
Yeah, of course.
And so for me, when I started, it was really to get back at her.
Okay.
So I would say the first—
a great reason, by the way.
Yeah, the first 6 months was just like, man, fuck you, watch. I'm going to show you. You
like
left
me. Like a million
me.
Men going to watch and say, that's how I felt.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Well, that's exactly it. It's like, you know, you want to do something, but she cut me out one day, literally cold turkey, just broke up with me. And I, you know, and
you
of course, male ego.
Fucking devastated.
I was outside the gym. I was outside of Equinox. And I remember she just called me, and I was like trembling and shit. Because before that, I was hooking up with a bunch of chicks. So she was the first one where I like committed, was loyal, you know, the whole thing. And then boom, she left me. I'm like, fuck.
Women are ruthless.
Like, fuck, the one that I, you know. And so when that happened, man, I was just like, you know, couldn't eat, couldn't talk. I was frustrated. And then I heard this line again from Tony. But he says that nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning that you give it. And so I said, you know what? Instead of
tell that to the chemicals floating around your brain.
well, for me, so I said, you know what? I'm going to give the meaning of this breakup. You know, like, what if I use this breakup? You know, what's the goodness? What's the opportunity? If I wanted to see good in it, even if I'm deluding myself, fuck it. Deluding myself is better than being optimistically, like, whatever. I'm sorry, deluding myself into optimism is better than just dwelling in negativity. So I did that, and I was like, well, what's good about this is I'm going to prove a point to her. One day, you know, I'm going to connect with amazing people, and I'm going to show her around. I mean, this exact experience is a representation
of that. First you go through the grieving process. Like,
right.
No one can console you for the first week. It's like,
right, yeah.
She's everything. She's the most beautiful. She's the smells.
No one will be like her. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Every old guy, I've been there. Trust me. All right. I pissed on my first wife. I actually pissed on her clothes, actually.
No way.
I was 22 years old, and she broke my heart. And after, like, the third time, she, like, promised she'd never do it again. She did it again.
Yeah.
And, like, I had a closed mouth. She moved out with another guy, and I pissed, like, I think 1986. I peed on her clothes, put in the boxes, and backed up.
Yeah.
And she married me like a year later, so it worked. Yeah. But anyway, no, but the point is, I get that, right? So then, so it starts like that. So you make a shift. Once you get rational about it, you say, I'm going to shift this anger, revenge into sort of motivation. I'll show her. Very normal, very healthy, right?
Right. So that happens the first about 6 to 9 months. Then after that, we started reaching, you know, hundreds of thousands, and it got into like the millions. And then I'm like, oh, shit. And then I started to get fan mail. I started to get emails from people all over the world. And so I'm with you about the, you know, I'm on a mission to help people. And, you know, it's a lot of bullshit from a lot of people. And you could smell it, right? It's very obvious. I'm with you on that. But honestly, it became that for me about a year in. And then I started making money. And at the time, I wasn't thinking millions. You know, your perception of money gets altered. I'm sure there was a point where, you know, 100,000 is a lot of money. And then it's like a million. Then it's 10 million. It's 100 million. And then, you know, you're what's possible stretches. And you're like, oh, shit, that's not a big deal. Why was I thinking so small? And so, you know, for me, once I started making a little bit of money, and then I started getting, like, people started reaching out and fans of the show from all over the world. This helped me. Thank you for interviewing him. Thank you for asking this question. It's exactly what I'm dealing with.
Feeling.
Surreal.
Yeah.
And to think that, you know, in 1 hour of time, think about the ripple effect. And so I really did become, honestly, a man on a mission, really to tell the stories in ways that nobody else can and synthesize them from people that no one else would. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, I'm a regular dude. So I started taking a pride in that I'm like the underdog, sitting down with multi-billionaires and just started, you know, I would do crazy shit though, man. I would literally, like, for Grant Cardone, I saw he was in town. I parked outside of a Beverly Hills restaurant. I drove 2 hours, watched his Instagram stories, and I stalked him to the gym. And when I went in, he was gone. So then he went somewhere else. I was like, oh, shit. So I kept, like, trying to follow their Instagram stories, found him outside of a restaurant because, you know, he said that he was there on his Instagram stories, waited 2.5 hours outside of a restaurant to pitch him on an interview. And I took a note out of your book, thinking about their objections in advance, and went up to him, and I was like, hey, Grant. Hey man, I drove 2 hours. I know you would normally say no. I know I don't have a lot of followers. I know I don't have a big podcast. I know you're totally busy and you would normally never do an interview with me, but I was wondering if you would consider me the young man you once were who had a dream when someone gave you a shot and do an interview with me. And he was like, oh shit, how can I say no to that? So we ended up filming an interview with him, and you know, 2 weeks later ended up being the most watched Grant Cardone interview ever at the time.
Right.
So for me, it became this like personal like hunt, like a challenge with myself. So it evolved from revenge on the girlfriend to becoming a man on a mission to prove this point. And then I started seeing money, and then it became about scaling that money. And then I learned about the opportunities online with the audience. You can collect emails. You can segment them and know who your audience is and serve them, you know, whether it's whether they want to learn sales or they want to learn digital marketing or they want to learn whatever. And I learned the business element of it. So it became this thing. But now it's absolutely yes to help people, and I mean that.
No.
But also I do want to get filthy fucking rich, live oceanfront in Laguna Beach with the love of my life, and inspire millions of people and make multiple millions of dollars at the same time.
Right. I guess my point is that I'm glad you said that, because I think a lot of people, they kind of get caught up in this artificial bullshit where they try to like make believe that it's all a mission to spread light and love around the world.
It's a PR statement.
And I just don't think it's true. I met a guy, this guy, Jay Shetty. Mm-hmm. I think for him it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that guy. Yeah.
Like for Jay Shetty, you know, he lived with monks for years. For Jay, I get it. Like that's his trip, right? Mm-hmm. But like he's like one in a million, I think. I think most people, they go addicts, they want to get rich, they want to have nice things. Mm-hmm. But that's not mutually exclusive with giving massive value to people and helping. And then once you get that taste of like, I know what it feels like when people write in, you change my life. It's an amazing feeling, right?
Surreal. Yeah.
All right. So now that we got that, so I get it. I will know more who you are, right?
Yeah.
So tell me the strat. You're a young guy now, not you, someone else, right? 25 years old, 23 years old. You want to start a podcast. Mm-hmm. You want to go out and then, you know, eventually monetize that podcast, right?
Right.
What's the first step?
So the first step is to start. You know, so many people, and I'm sure you've seen this, they spend more time designing their logo than actually working on the business or getting the equipment or putting a team in place.
To my staff over there, you hear what he just said? What did I do when you guys want to design a logo? I said, fuck the logo, fuck the walls, fuck everything. Start the fucking podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, my man. Yeah, I hear you on that one.
So I agree. We're in agreement on step one.
Okay, step one. So, yeah.
They learned and said, wow, you know, you were right. We didn't really need those $8,000 stone fucking walls.
Exactly. And that's why I went into debt. That's why I went $30,000 in debt buying shit I don't need. Because a lot of times you're just scared to do shit. So you justify, oh, I need to do this first and that first and that first.
I think what happens to a lot of people in the beginning is young entrepreneurs, they don't realize that the first idea that you have, the way you see things is not going to way they're going to work out.
Yeah,
so what you typically end up doing is if you spend money and put resources into trying to make something perfect, mm-hmm. as soon as you exit, you say, it was supposed to be in that direction.
Yeah, we fucked up.
And all of a sudden, the stone walls go, oh, we didn't mean stone walls. We need wood wall. You don't really know what something is. And I think the best scene of a movie I've ever seen that really explains this was in the movie The Social Network.
Oh, absolutely.
Where the scene where they want, the actor, who's the actor? I forgot his name. Anyway, he says, like, they want to advertise on Facebook. He goes, we don't even know what Facebook is yet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be cool before we start trying to monetize Facebook. In other words, he didn't really understand what it was yet. And to try to almost then exploit something or, you know, dive in, whatever, you don't really know what something is until you actually go out and do it and let it grow a little bit, right?
That's right. Yeah. Start with what you know and then let it grow. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you made a mistake in the beginning, right? You spent too much money trying to, like, make it beautiful.
Exactly. Make it perfect, right? Perfection paralysis, they call it. Yeah.
I mean, Jay Shetty's podcast, I was there, it's like the size of a closet. And the guy's got like 5 billion viewers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No, because it's not about that. It's just that it's not about, it's about what you say on the podcast.
It's exactly, yeah, exactly. It's about the quality right? of the content,
yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. obviously the audio, I said, like, but I did say, I said, hey, get the best audio equipment in the world. Mm-hmm. That you got to have, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Put your money into audio. Yeah, get some, don't get maybe 12 matching cameras yet. We'll buy that after, in a few weeks.
Yeah, once we get the ball rolling.
Yeah, yeah, right. You say, but the point is, but you're not going to know what to spend your money. So it's not like you don't spend any money. Mm-hmm. Certain basic stuff, right? I used to call, when I was doing a lot of venture capital, mm-hmm. called the furniture test. So if someone comes to me for money, mm-hmm. they want me to finance their company, I'll say, oh, let me see your location. If I go mm-hmm. into their business, you walk in like, oh, here's my beautiful credenza. I'm like, hey, I'll never give the
yeah,
guy.
Hell no,
They're
yeah.
putting their money into things that it shouldn't be put into, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so first step, just get started, right?
Yeah, first step, just get started. Get the ball rolling. And I say, you know, just commit early. And I learned this from, there's a guy named David Lee. I don't know if you know about him. He's one of the largest Rolex dealers, authorized dealers in North America. Very
David
successful
Lee.
Guy. David Lee, yeah.
No.
Very, very successful guy. And he told me when he was trying to get, he became like a mentor to me because he told me when he was trying to get vendors that he would try to get like Cartier and Rolex. You got to get approved and, you know, licensed and all mm-hmm. this. So he told me that he was like, man, it's going to take forever. So he's trying to think, man, how could I do this? How could I do this? So I'll never forget this advice. He said that he went to Rolex first before he started anything. And he flew there and would try to get meetings with the executives at Rolex. And he flew there like a dozen times on his own dime, waited outside the office and said, if you guys just have 5 minutes of your time, would love to just pitch how I'd like to sell Rolexes. And they kept saying, no. So he'd fly back. And then finally one day they're like, man, this guy's here again. They gave him a meeting and they ended up giving him the license eventually.
Right.
But by getting the Rolex thing, now he could leverage the Rolex thing and he got Cartier and all these other brands. And so I'll never forget, he told me, he said, always start with the big ones first.
Mm-hmm.
Always start with the big ones first. So what I would tell podcasters is go big fast. Don't assume that there's this imaginary ceiling. I got to work my way up. Now, to some degree, you may need to, but you're better off suspending belief that you can go big fast because that's just going to build so much more momentum than trying to just put filler shit on your podcast or just talk about whatever.
In other words, so let's say you're an unknown person, right? Yeah. And you don't really have the ability to call up a famous person with someone, mm-hmm. or say someone with a big following, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And say, come on my podcast because I have a big following.
Right.
So what you're saying is just power through that.
Yeah.
Go after big people, find someone. A lot of it's about finding someone in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, the right assistant, the right time. And also, here's another secret that we found. Is that if you go to the guest, it makes it a hell of a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know you're a busy guy, so this probably might not apply to you, right? So people don't overwhelm Jordan with requests. But imagine, like, if someone said, hey, Jordan, can you come to our location an hour away? I'm just starting a podcast. Mm. Da, da, da. Probably not that interesting to you relative to everything on your schedule. But if someone's up and coming and you kind of had a little bit more time, maybe you're not as big a name as yourself, and they said, hey, we'd love to come down for 20 minutes of your time. We'll come to you. Super simple. Hmm. Isn't that a lot more of a compelling ask than the other thing?
In fact, when I was first starting this pot, so I was approached a bunch of years ago to do this, and I just was too busy. And a lot of reasons because my son is in business with me now. So my son is like my link to the modern era. So,
yeah, he's your right hand.
Yeah. So I was very fortunate because I had the movie. It was easy to just to go and speak, right?
Right,
but now that I'm really, you know, building a much different type of business. So
were you happy with the movie, by the way, overall? Do you feel it was pretty spot on?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, it could always be, oh, I wish that was different than that. But overall, yes, very happy,
very appreciative,
and fortunate because, you know, you can't plan something like that out. You know, you don't write a book with the idea that let's make it into a movie and have the biggest movie star on the planet play you and the biggest director. That's a long shot. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I'm very happy. Yeah. So, but the point I was making was that when I first started thinking about doing a podcast, mm-hmm. obviously I said, wow, okay, this would be great because I'm well known.
Right.
And that allows me to go and call people and get really amazing people.
Access.
But what I did say to myself, I said, you know, if I really want to make this awesome, the best thing would be to do is be to get like some, I had this idea, I'm going to get this beautiful, like either a private jet and just turn this private jet into a mobile podcast studio. Because if I want to go to like, you know, yeah, let's say I can get through to like a Bill Gates or something.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Or because I have the ability to get through to really, but he ain't coming to me. And I'm not saying Bill Gates would go on my show. I'm saying, so Elon Musk for a good example, right? Mm-hmm. But if I flew right to him there, yeah, of course, that makes it really, really
easier.
So I agree with you 100%. I think it's a really important thing. And it was either that or a bus to make it like a fun thing, like to, you know, have to go, you know, the Partridge Family, you know, come on down, there's a song.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I think it's true that one of the drawbacks of having a podcast, like let's say, especially if you're in a remote location,
right?
right? Who's going to come to you? And I guess you could do it by phone on Skype. Is it as good? It's not the same as a face-to-face.
Yeah, it's not. Well, the content could be, but the audience isn't going to be as compelled, right? Like a lot of times the audio quality isn't going to be as good. There's minor nuances of it. And
also
most
energy exchange, I think,
yeah,
right?
That's like, right. The dynamic feed off it. You know what I mean? It's a lot different. And the audience is going to be much more stimulated by, you know, you have multiple angles. There's a lot of little things that add up versus just a flat screen. Oh, what was that? You know, is your audio connected? You know, these little nuances at scale, the numbers fall off when you do that.
What about the idea that, So I'm a believer in branding and consistency, right? One negative of going out is that means you'll always be in a different location. So would you try to like have your own little mobile setup, like a little green screen you push by? Would you do something to try to make it so like your logo is hanging around something? It's unimportant.
You know, it's actually very interesting that you say that. We actually took the complete opposite approach. Again, when I started, we would go to these locations and, you know, most of the people we started interviewing are very, very wealthy.
Right.
So we'd go ocean.
And your beautiful home.
Beautiful. Yeah. So better than a set. And, you know, in my opinion, certainly at that time, it was also the most cost effective thing.
Obviously.
So I was just doing the best I could with the limited resources I had.
No, it's very smart.
And so I would go to these people's home or office. And most of the time it was Laguna Beach, oceanfront, or it was in, I think we filmed with Grant. We filmed in Malibu with the owner of the Seven Jeans, his house.
The combination
filmed
in the Hollywood Hills. Cribs podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And we're just these beautiful locations. They're relaxed. We're relaxed. The water's in the background. Yeah. So it ended up being that approach. I hear you on the consistency thing. And at scale, it's a lot easier to do that. But for us at the time, man, I was just a broke kid with a dream on a mission. So yeah, we just did what we could and we'd go to them.
So step one, get started, right? Mm-hmm. Step two, don't start by going.
Start big.
Go up the ladder, right? Try to get one big player and then use that player to leverage other players saying, hey, this guy was on my podcast, right?
Exactly. Because you're going to get an audience quicker. Your podcast grows on an audience, and the only way to monetize online is two ways. You need two things, an audience and an offer, So I was like, okay, cool. Like I got to build this audience. But if I do it by interviewing Joe Schmo, who made $1 million a year, probably not as compelling as somebody who made, you know, 10 million or 50 million or 100 million. And here's the other thing for a lot of people listening. They might be like, oh, well, you lived in LA, so it's easy. People are close by. That's true. But I guarantee you, there's some amazing people, very successful people. I'm sure you know this, all over the country.
Yeah.
And all 50 states. So wherever you're at, the barrier to entry is a lot easier than you think. You know, if you take 10 or 15 calls or emails to an assistant and ask for 30 minutes of someone's time, you'll get in the door to one of them or two of them. And then just little by little, those numbers increase. And I did that. And here we are today. So it works.
Now next step. Okay. So that's about getting people. What's the next thing that you would?
The third thing is once you get somebody confirmed as the biggest, now you got to build a team or a system. So whether that's equipment, depends on where you're at financially. If you can afford it, like you said, get the best that you can possibly afford. Quality-wise, in the long run, that's going to serve you well. But if you're just getting started, what I did is I would actually try to get volunteers. Mm-hmm. So now my team's all paid. But when I started, I literally
good for you guys. I'm glad.
but when I started, it was all volunteer-based. So I'd say, hey, do you want to come interview this, you know, the creator of Hot Cheetos with me? And it's not very hard to find freelance video people. And I'm like, hey, dude, I'm a broke dude. I got a dream. You guys want to come? And, you know, so I sold people on what I could that way. But that was after I bought like almost $10,000 worth of equipment that went to shit because I don't know how to use it. So then I learned, once I started making a little bit of money, I learned,
what kind of equipment? What do you mean? Like what? Like
tripods and cameras and mics and headphones and all sorts of random shit. Boom mics, just shit that at the time we didn't need. But then I realized like, shit, I have the equipment. I have nobody to man it.
Right.
And I'm going to pay people anyways to man it. Shit. Why don't I just pay freelancers to do it? I walk in, do my thing. They do the mics. They do the cameras. I don't worry about shit. I come in, I can focus on the quality interview. So third thing I would say is one of two things. Number one, either purchase equipment that you can afford that's cost effective or, build a team that is great at what they do so that they can actually systematize it. And like you said, just rinse and repeat, be consistent with your branding.
Okay. And what about in terms of, you know, getting your podcast out there? Mm-hmm. Do you believe you should spend any money on advertising, boosting posts, releasing? What give a strategy for sort of, you know, besides leveraging off of other people's viewers, what about your own stuff?
Yeah. So consistency is huge. Consistency is huge, meaning posting every week. So whatever your rhythm is, if you post in that rhythm, the algorithm is going to favor you. Also, when you're starting too, there's a lot of different strategies. But to be honest, we didn't do much ad spend for the first 2 years. So I would say nowadays, because of the market and there's so many more, I would definitely say ad spend whatever you can just to get the ball rolling, even if it's $50 a day, swipe up ads on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. And this is probably the most important thing when it comes to growing it. You know those mini 1 minute clips that everybody cuts up from interviews?
Yeah.
Those are so powerful. Because maybe somebody doesn't see the podcast on YouTube or iTunes right. or Spotify, but they see the clip and they're like, oh shit, the Wolf of Wall Street guy has a podcast?
Right.
Shit, let me go check it out. Everybody's on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And so if you do that and you do that every day and then the guest, you share it, the guest shares it, now you start to go a little bit viral and now you start driving traffic and one piece of 1 hour content can live on, you know, 10, 15x fold. So that really helps, in my opinion, a lot more than advertising, you know, getting people to share the content.
Let me give you a totally subject change. Mm-hmm. What do you hate about yourself?
Good question. My time management skills.
What's like your quality? You know, what is it that about yourself that you ever feel like you can't get out of your own way with certain things? Like what's the part of you that you think holds you back? What is it that you like just really, you know, you think like, wow, you know, I haven't really got that part of myself figured out yet.
Mm-hmm. That's a good fucking question. So I think for me, it's about what the whole game is really about. You know, what am I really playing this game for? Yeah, I love it. Yeah, impacting people and yeah, making money doing it. But even if I do get to where I want to get to, oceanfront, Laguna Beach, and, you know, a bunch of fucking money and help a lot of people, then what? Then what next? You know, then what next? So I think for me, it's just a constant. I'm sure you had it, man. Like maybe you're making money, but you're like, there's just itches you can't scratch. Maybe things you're like, man, like, you know, I wish I, you know, I could give more, or like, is that even going to fulfill me? Or, you know, knowing what it is, but keep in mind, I'm 27. So, you know, God willing, I have more of my life ahead of me than behind me. So I'm still kind of new. And I guess that's what it is. It's like, what's the bigger game about?
I always think about that. I don't have that anymore. I always felt that way. And then one day I did the math, I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, I have less of my life ahead of me than I have behind me. I'm like, I'm older. I don't know what that means, you know?
Dude, you've had one
I've had a good life, though, right?
Absolutely. No, but you're still a young guy, man. Your energy's off the
top. You know what I hate about? I'll tell you what I hated about myself in the past. Well, I'll tell you my answer, right? Maybe this will help you kind of clarify your own. If there was one thing I hated about myself, mm-hmm. was that I could not quell my desire for instant gratification. That as like I had this thing, this insecurity or whatever that drove me to use the skills and the resources and the talents I had to just get it done now versus the idea that if I could use that and delay my gratification, mm-hmm. I'll make even more money and probably avoid a lot of the problems I had. Mm-hmm. And I was aware of it. That's a sick thing because I was aware of it.
Shit.
But I couldn't control it as a kid. It took a lot of pain. So that's what I was meaning. Like, there's something about yourself. Like today, I don't have that. I'll tell you what my thing today is. I'll be honest with you. My thing is I fucking worry all the time still for no reason.
About what?
I worry about, I guess, because when you've had a life like mine and, you know, you've been all the way to the top, back down, and you make it back again, right? Even though I know that like everything in my life today is so incredibly pure and good because it just is,
right?
I wonder if I'll ever get to that point where I will fully reconcile the past with the future. I don't let it stop me or disempower me, but I'd be lying to you if I said I had everything figured out and reconciled, where I still have that unnatural worry about somehow that something's going to go wrong. And part of that is healthy for motivation, by the way.
Right, yeah.
Because it keeps me going, right? And a lot of people motivate like that. But I guess what I'm asking you is like, is there something about yourself? Because you seem like a pretty level-headed guy,
Thank you, man.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's got to be like one, like what's your dark side? Like dark side is the instant gratification. And of course, take any blow, then I'm like disgusting animal with prostitutes and animal. God knows what I do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's out of my life. I'm sold for over 20 years, thank God, right?
Did you feel at that time? Did you feel? And I know the interview's this way, but I gotta ask. No, I'm so curious. At that time, did you feel a sense of guilt the whole time, or did you kind of just put it in the back of your mind?
It's not guilt, so to speak, because it's not like what happens is that when you're engaged in the life that I was living, right? Mm-hmm. If you haven't rationalized it out, you will go bananas. mm-hmm. you'll lose it. So, you know, what you do is you rationalize your behavior mm-hmm. and convince yourself it's really not that bad.
Gotcha.
You surround yourself with people who are doing the same thing as you are. So your map of the world starts to change. You think, this is us. So everyone's doing this. I was fortunate. I had my junior partner, Danny, who was mm-hmm. the greatest. Because Danny was that guy, no matter how bad I was, I'm like, when I get as bad as him, I know I got problems, right? So yeah. It's like that guy I could point to. I don't mean that. I love you, Danny. I'm just saying it's like, you know, a metaphor mm-hmm. that you surround yourself with people who are living a similar life. I always used to say Stratton was like its own independent society that, and within the rules of the boardroom, the normal rules of society ceased to exist.
Right.
We had our own set of a code, so to speak, that ruled what was normal behavior within inside the boardroom, which was pretty much anything but public, you know, executions, basically. You know, it was crazy there, right?
So people were really hooking up in offices. It was really that insane.
We had a van of hookers in the basement, okay, that were like just turning tricks, and it wasn't state sponsored or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, I thought it was pretty cool because people have to go to all the places, they have to go to all the massage parlors to get the happy end, they can get it right downstairs. I thought it was, well, it saves time, it's more efficient, right?
Yeah.
So I knew it was there. I wasn't running it or anything, right? You know. But those things have happened over time. What happens in any company is people always. It's probably not happening at Facebook like this, but no. But any good company, what you and I do it here is I try to fill the needs, wants, and desires of my employees.
That's right.
Here. Mm-hmm. So they don't leave. I want them to be here and be happy and productive and have fun.
Fulfilled, yeah.
Yeah, right. So that's my thing. But my question to you is like, do you have a dark side?
Oh, totally. Ask my assistant. Yeah.
Do you have a bad temper?
Oh, yeah.
How bad?
It forced me to meditate.
Like Mad Max, like my dad?
it forced me to like be super into meditation. Otherwise, I would have gone apeshit insane. I actually lost my hair. Because of how stressed my hair, like, actually got super thin.
Really?
Because of how stressed. Oh, yeah. The only reason that you see me is level-headed.
I don't know. Your hair looks pretty. It looks okay to me.
Well, it's gone better now since the meditation. But I actually got super. I used to be super against meditation. But for me, I was so intense because I'm the same. When you said patience, same shit. The only reason that I became a little bit more mellow-headed is because I got into meditation because I was losing my mind with the same thing instant. For example, say I have like a business thing. I need to handle it now. If there's an issue in the relationship with my significant other, like, oh, we'll talk about it later or when I'm back in town. I'm like, no, fuck that. We're talking about it now. Like, so for me, I do have that trigger thing. And I think that's also what catered me to get the big guests fast.
What's the worst thing you've done, like in terms of losing your temper? Like, have you really exploded at one of your employees when you're like, wish you could take it back?
Not with my team. I love my team, man. My team is so good.
Well, is this the team that's still here? See, I know like what it's like to build a team.
Yeah.
Because like for these guys, you probably have four great guys. You got to go through 20 assholes.
That's right. Yeah. So, like, 13, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have the greatest team ever here. The best, right?
Yeah. Great
but
guys.
But I had to get through a bunch of morons to get to the good people.
Yeah.
Right?
Trial and error. Yeah. That's how it is. Man, I've punched walls. I've thrown shit out the window. Yeah, man. I definitely asked some ex-girlfriends. I'm sure they got some stories for you, man. It's been nuts. Let me think off top. Man, maybe one time. I mean, it's not that bad, but maybe one time me and my girl got in like an argument and shit. And I just pulled over in the middle of the freeway and she had all her shit. And I just threw it out of the car. And then I didn't leave her there, but like we got off the exit. I left her and then I left. But that was as intense. But I, you know, I punched windows. I punched walls more so a few years ago. But nothing. Nothing too crazy.
So what's your like ultimate best side? What's your best, the light side of you? What's like the best you?
I'm very like patient. Like, so it's weird. I'm like impatient.
Impatiently patient.
Yeah. When stress is high, when big shit happens, I'm very patient. I'm very mellow. Like if something really, really emotionally heavy or traumatic happens, I can be calm. It's the little shit that I get pissed and worked up on a lot. But I guess that would be it, man. Just like I'm actually very like soft and loving, but like pretty like soft on the inside, but on the outside, like with business in interviews, I'll be composed. But sometimes with business stuff or clients or, you know, whatever, you know, shit happens. Yeah, I get very like, now, let's do it now. We need to do this now, now. Everything is now, now, now. So
what do you think about this whole age now? Mm-hmm. We live in a political correctness and sort of like the snowflakes and safe spaces. You know, just don't. Just tell me, you probably know how I feel, but I want to know how you feel. Don't like, you know, tell me what you really feel about it.
Yeah,
you think
no.
It's good, bad, and it has its good points and bad points? What do you think?
You know, it's interesting. I think it controls the temperament of greed a little bit. But I think also on the flip side, like you said, there's a lot of bullshit. I mean, how many times have you watched a video and you're like, man, that's just somebody regurgitating something that you've said before or something that Gary Vee said before? There's a lot of that PR shit about like, yeah, I just want to help the world. I want to impact people. And I believe to a degree it's like—
I'm talking about like social justice warriors.
Oh, gotcha.
I think, like, what do you think of this shit? You're younger than me. You grew up in this era now.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, the world is almost a bit upside down. It's like, you know, where, like, it's like not so much what you do, but what you say. Like, it is all these words that are off limits. And there's not really, it used to be about the intent behind a word. Now it's like the word. And the words are more important than the actions. And I'm just wondering what you grew up in this and you're in it. What do you think of it?
Like how media demonizes people for one little statement they said or one phone call off record.
Just everybody. Yeah. Like, you know, you see these people like on TV marching and screaming about like everything. And it's like all about social justice. Like people who maybe like didn't have a great experience in junior high school and high school, like starting to not think the whole world owes them in some way.
Yeah. Well, I think to me, when it comes to social justice, I know it might probably not be a popular opinion to a lot of people listening, but to me, if you want to do something about it, go fucking do something about it. Like if you want to complain about politicians or say this, that, the other, or picket signs outside or whatever, that's going to be less effective than you go run for office. You go actually get involved with it. You go actually connect. You go be a decision maker.
If like you'd like Tony Robbins. I know
I
you
do.
Like your,
I do.
Your
I do.
Back, I think you're going on, you're doing a on one of his events. You're going to be on stage or something?
Yeah, and I was a top 30 affiliate partner for the biggest internet launch in history with the recent course. And I'm traveling to
So what do you think
like,
what they're
that,
doing with him, Buzz? What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
That's my question. Like, not like Tony Robbins.
That's a great question,
He gets attacked by these people. Mm-hmm. And what do you think? You think that's a fair point? You think that someone that, 10 years ago said that he either walked around naked or didn't or slept. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting because I've actually been to Tony's seminars. So actually, in the context of the environment, it's very different than if you just hear a segment while you're at home watching TV. And then the anchors pre-frame it as like another devastating turn of events. Tony apparently is, having people walk on fire coals and thousands have gotten blisters on their feet. You know, they can present it as like this cult-like thing. Or for example, when they had the assistant of that woman who came forward and said that, she had mentioned that sometimes he would be naked in the hotel room when she was an assistant. But then later they framed it as like, oh, that was one of the prereqs to work with him, that they had to be okay with him being naked.
It's so sick that I want to see how big his dick is. Cause I
see that personal power. Yeah.
I'm not gay, but. Dude, this guy's got the biggest teeth, the biggest hands, the biggest head. I have to fucking believe that it's scraping the floor, right?
Yeah.
I
just think.
What do you think? I mean, I'm not. You never thought it? Come on. You didn't think, am I sick? Is this a wrong me? And I thought that?
I don't know, man. But
maybe.
I know at his seminars, he said that they...
He's got to be massive, the guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, his book's called Awaken the Giant Within.
But think about it, though. It's not that he's just tall. He's like 8?
Yeah, similar.
He's big everywhere, the guy. Like, his teeth is... I just fucking wonder. So I think these girls, some of them maybe just, I don't know. I think like it didn't come out like that. Like I thought like if someone played say, Annie, he destroyed me.
Yeah.
After Tony, I never, it's like, that was it.
Couldn't walk again.
It was it. I was crippled. I was in the hospital. Like, I think there'll be proof like they were not. I had to go 6 weeks in the hospital. I don't make light of this stuff. But I think a lot of it's my personal. See,
totally,
whether or not you love Tony, my personal opinion is, that's a bunch of fucking bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. And then a lot of times...
He's no angel, but who is an angel?
Who is? Yeah, who is? Yeah, the people reporting the news aren't either. We've heard about, you know, news anchors that are doing sketchy shit. So it's like this impossible barometer. And here's the other thing, too, is like, let's keep it real, man. Like, how many times did women hook up with a lot of these celebrities? Now, I'm not saying that some women weren't taking advantage of them. I'm not saying that at all. But how many times did they hook up with them out of just being fond of who the person is?
Yeah.
But then later see a bunch of women with accusations...
I know, I have a good friend.
You get what I'm saying? And they could jump on the bandwagon and be like, well, me too.
Listen, here's the story.
And I'm not undermining them, but I'm just saying.
I am undermining a lot of them.
Okay.
I'll say it.
You got more balls than I do, yeah.
I don't give a shit. they don't hate me. They hate me. I have a daughter who I love to death. And let me tell you something, guys. So I am this men that like Harvey Weinstein, of fucking fuckers that got what they deserve.
Abusive,
And many people like that. And
totally.
It's good. That this is not allowed anymore. Totally am all for female empowerment, but there's a fucking line that's been crossed here. And I believe, here's the thing, what I was trying to draw me was that I believe that 99% of the women in that movement absolutely agree with me. They know what's real. I don't think any woman wants a man to be proven guilty till he is guilty till proven innocent. Who would want that in this society? That's crazy. That's like a different world we live in. I don't think any healthy woman wants that. I think what happens with these movements is like some people fucking hijack it. Like some a couple of actresses are out of their minds and say stupid shit on a daily basis.
Or they want to stand for something.
So we had this amazing thing that happened. Female empowerment, which needed to happen. Mm-hmm. You need to get rid of that shit. That casting couch shit needed to go. It wasn't right. It wasn't fair. It wasn't fair that women didn't get paid the same as men. All the shit that I believe in. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter, of course, but the way it's gone, the pendulum now. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend who like got Me Too'd, all right? And he shows me the text from the girl who accused me. I love you. Your eyes were so great. When can I see you? And then she's saying that he basically forced himself on her. That's my point.
Yeah, totally.
What do you think about
that? No, totally. I think that's the case too. And I know
I know you're nervous because you're scared about your business. I'm not.
Well, no. To be honest, because I know people who have been abused, so I don't want to undermine them.
And you're not. But how is that? Here's the point, buddy. I don't think that undermines. I think
A lot of people are sensitive
about
it.
False victimization, the fucking victim mentality, it takes away from real victims. Yeah. That were forced onto the casting couch, that were faced with either you sleep with me or you lose the part. Mm-hmm. That's disgusting and gross. It had to stop.
Yeah.
But how about there's a woman who got the guy from Warner Brothers fired. Mm-hmm. Kevin, what was it? Takahara. He got fired. Some insane actress like manipulated him into doing this. He lost his job at Warner Brothers. Might lose. To me, that's disgusting and gross. When was going, and the real victim.
And I see more of that shit happening too.
And the real victim. You know what the real victims are? The actresses that didn't get the parts because they wouldn't sacrifice their ethics and integrity. Mm-hmm. Not the women that, I did it and I got famous. Now it's like, I shouldn't have done it. You know what?
That's a good point. I never thought of that.
The victims are the ones that didn't do it. That's my point. Mm-hmm. So I'm not against Me Too at all. Mm-hmm. I'm against that weird destructive faction that yells the loudest. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm against.
Yeah, the abuse of it. Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. No, I hear you. My only thing is
you'll agree with me in 5 years. You'll be able to say, "No, you'll be richer. You'll give
well,
a shit."
Well. Here's the other thing too. Is like because I know people who have gone through it, but I do agree that a lot of people jump on the bandwagon and go, "Well, shit, me too." Or I guess that could qualify. Or you know, it becomes a sense of identity. Or a lot of people nowadays who don't have purpose, their identity becomes for a cause. You get what I'm saying? Everybody wants to be a part of something, and unfortunately, there have been people where they might not have anything going on in their life, and they go, "Well, shit. I guess that kind of did happen to me." And then they, you know, you can manipulate situations to be different in your head after than they were in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, because if someone filmed that actual event, it looked pretty consensual to me, you know, but later it could be like, well, he forced himself on me. How many times have you heard stories about where they came back to their place? Yeah. We came back to his place. We had a couple of drinks.
Tough to be a guy these days. Let me tell you,
especially in media.
Let me frame it a different way of view, right? Yeah. I'm going to tell you a story, right? And I'll ask you, it's a story with a question, right? Mm-hmm. Story. So, my wife, my partner, right? She's probably the most authentic person I know. Okay. You could hate her. You could love her. She says shit. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that out loud.
Even you say that?
Even I say it.
Wow.
Because she says what's on her mind. And she says what she believes to be true to her. Mm-hmm. Some of the things she says, really, and it's not that I don't agree with them. They just sound really raw sometimes, but they're really authentic, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't believe I'm fully authentic even still, even though I'm coming out strong. There's a lot I don't say because I wouldn't say brave enough to say it yet, but I really haven't come to terms with my most authentic self yet. Especially on this podcast, I'm just starting.
Right,
I'm feeling my way through of how much of a maniac I want. Because as you probably can aware, I'm capable of going to some pretty crazy places if I want to.
Yeah.
Right, I'm on one podcast with Theo Von. We're talking about leaping off, and you know, should you fuck someone after an MMA fight? Imagine an MMA fight where you get to insert yourself into the winner. That's like Theo Von. And then I'm on someone else's podcast with Jay Shetty talking about spirituality in India.
Yeah,
I can swing both ways.
Yeah, you got extremities. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But my point is, I don't believe that I'm fully authentic yet.
Right.
Where do you think you are on a scale of 1 to 10? And of you being your authentic self, how much of the shit that's coming out of your mouth right now is filtered because either you're trying to build your brand and you're scared if people really knew who you were?
Right.
Honestly.
No, honestly, I'm pretty even keeled. I would say anything I don't know is based upon me just never really considering it or giving it much thought. But for the most part, I'm actually very thoughtful when I think about stuff. Because
when you express to the public, how much of this is your representative and how much it's the real you?
No, this is me spot on.
Spot on.
Spot on. If you ask my team, I'm talking exactly the same. But here's why. I grew up in a loving household, but there was moments of intensity that got really intense.
How old are your parents right now?
My parents are...
Well, I don't want to ask that.
Actually, today's my mom's
birthday.
They're
probably my age. I don't even want to know.
Actually, today's my mom's 60th birthday.
Okay, at least she's older than me.
Today's my mom's 60th birthday.
All right.
Your dad? Same thing. He's like 61, 62.
Okay. I'm younger than him. I feel good again.
Okay. And you know, I grew up in a very tense household with lots of stress.
What's the ethnic background?
And so half Middle Eastern and half Hispanic. Okay. Yeah. So quite a lot of emotion on both sides of that.
Right.
And
plates, vases flying. And stuff.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's funny. They're loving parents, good parents. But sometimes stuff got really stressful and I was a sensitive kid.
Right.
So I was very emotional, reactive, and like really had a really hot temper. I used to pull out my hair, punch myself in the head. I was really depressed when I was younger.
Really?
Yeah. And that's what forced me to start getting into personal development and meditation. So honestly, I know it might sound like refined or too even keeled to be real. But the reality is sometimes authenticity is something that you kind of like cultivated along the way, because I had to be balanced to remain sane in that household, to remain sane dealing with a lot of the shit I went through emotionally. And I've been through some really rough points. And so for me, I learned to tame it a little bit, to be honest with you. So no, but this is how I talk with my team.
No, I guess what I'm saying is that like, I think that one of the problems I see in the world today is that there's been a shift in the last 10 years and it was insidious. Mm-hmm. Meaning it was happening very slowly over many years, where this sort of idea of political correctness was infiltrating the institutions of education.
Right, right.
So what happened was, is that, you know, 10 years back, the people who had been through that college experience of like what you can say, what you can't say, what's politically correct, those people are now coming into power, have more of a voice.
Gotcha.
So it's all of a sudden the norm of is starting to shift.
That's the dominant.
And this has been going on for a really long time. Mm-hmm. There's been an infiltration into America's institutions of education that are I believe are completely corrupting it and destroying it, and they're spitting out people who are not authentic, who are more concerned with what people say. For instance, like one of the things you learn in self-development is like, your words shouldn't have that much power over me.
Sure.
So the idea that everything's got a label and things, you can't say this, it's hurtful, it hates me, it's and that. Now, obviously, something shouldn't be said,
right?
But that's a very kind of a small list in my book,
right?
Okay. But the point is, everything now is getting onto this list of what you can say and what you can't say, right? And
yeah.
My point is with you is that I have a lot of dark thoughts. I just do. I have a lot of light thoughts. I have a lot of dark thoughts. I got a lot of funny thoughts. I got a lot of extreme thoughts, a lot of sexual thoughts, a lot of business thoughts. I got all sorts of thoughts going on.
Yeah.
I don't really filter out that many of my thoughts. I do some more than I used to, perhaps, because of what's going on, but very few. I was wondering, what about you? Do you have a lot of different thoughts that you filter out, or do you let them all out?
No, man. To me, I have a few things I focus on, and I'm all in. I'm an all in type person. So I have an obsessive personality. I'm either all in on the few things I give a shit about, my team, my mission, my business, you know, and everything else, I could care less.
You know? I would love to meet with you again in 5 years from now.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely. Serious. No, really.
Yeah,
I'd love to see where you are in 5 years from now.
Thank you, brother. Yeah.
Because I think you'd be really successful.
Thank you very much.
I really do.
There's a lot coming from you.
I do. And I think you'd be successful. You got you have a lot of the game, so to speak, figured out right now. You made some really smart decisions. You're willing to work really hard, which is 90% of the battle.
Thank you.
You're not willing you're willing to go out there and take rejection, another big part of the battle.
Oh, yeah.
You studied my system. You studied other people's as well, right? So you know how to influence and persuade. So you're in a good direction.
Thank you, man.
I'd love to see where you are in 5 years from now in terms of what. If I ask you this question, what do you think? What are all your thoughts about? If you have all these other thoughts that you really don't feel comfortable expressing right now, because, you know, for whatever reason, I'd love to hear this answer in 5 years.
No, I love that. No, but I hear you. But to be honest with you, man, it's like, to me, I really focus on a few things. Even ask my team, how many things do I outsource? Like, to me, I outsource decisions. I'm sure you've seen it too. It's like, I outsource everything that is not in my immediate sphere of focus. And so for me, I really don't spend a lot of time thinking about things. So anytime I'm asked about something, it's going to be in a rational, balanced way where I see both sides.
You're alone with your thoughts. Like, you know, like
if you would have asked me a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, like I would have had shit all over the place. Like, dude, you want to hear some dark shit? I was so depressed. Okay, well, let's do this. I've never admitted this. This is really bad, but I was at a point in high school, my senior year of high school, man, where I was so bummed out that I literally contemplated shooting up a school. Like I literally, and I know that's crazy, but I was so fucking depressed and so mad at the fact that life wasn't going my way. I couldn't get chicks. I had acne all over my face. That should tell you a little bit of the intensity of the temper I had, that I literally would think about that. And I, now we're getting I would study the shooters and how other people did that shit. And a lot of people would be like, oh, they're sick or they're twisted. And you know, now that's light years away from what I would think. But at that time, I could see how they would get to that point. And the thought was like, well, man, fuck, the world didn't give me shit, so fuck them. Like, no, they don't give me time, fucking attention, da da da, all this shit. Like, fucking let me get back at them, you know? And you know, that was one element of it, you know? So I really had a hot temper, but had that trajectory, had I fed into that and not found, you know, people like yourself who preach living your better life and, you know, making money and bettering yourself and, you know, Tony and Grant and, you know, all these other people, you know, you experiment with different people, you learn along the way, you tweak, you pivot. But that's what really forced me to become like more balanced, man. Because if had I gone in that direction, man, I wouldn't have the passionate few, man. I'd be the dead one.
How many kids do you think feel that way? Like there's a very big difference.
Especially nowadays,
well,
a lot.
It's a very big difference between, like, it's a really big admission. I'm glad you said that, and I respect you.
Yeah, scared.
Times more now. No,
yeah,
I
scared
respect
to share
you
that, but yeah.
I think everyone in this room probably respects you more now than before you said that.
Yeah.
I think my question is, you know, it's one thing to have thoughts like that and a very different thing to act on those thoughts,
true.
Right?
Pull the trigger.
But my question is, how many people, kids you're at that age nowadays, you think have those thoughts? You think it's common? You think it's like, you think there's like a kid, one or two kids in every school that has that fantasy playing out in his head?
Much more. Especially nowadays. We see it happening. I mean, look at the math. Like, it's happening every month.
Why do you think that is?
Because people compare the fantasy of the way they wish it was to the reality of how it is. And they attach to the fantasy, and as a result, they live a nightmare now.
Like the social, like they look at the social media.
Well, they look at social media. That guy has more followers. Everybody, you know, all the girls like the guy with more followers. Fuck, how come I don't have a lot of followers? Fuck, it's because I'm not good looking. Damn, I don't have as much money as him and his parents, right? That comparison game. And think, you got to think about it. They're on their phones all day long. When they go home, they're on their phones all day long. And these are kids who didn't have time to develop their intellect or rationalize that it's not all about that. And so when you breed up thing, and then on TV and the music, and it's all the songs are about, you know, fucking girls, having lots of views, having lots of money, they're raised by their social media, their environment, the music more than their parents or more than their own rational thoughts. At that age, they're so impressionable. Add to that hormones, right? Hormones start kicking in. You get your first boner. You're like, oh my God, you know, people start having their first sexual experiences, start tasting that. You know, with Tinder, you swipe right. They have so many options and so many stimulus and not a rational, strong mind to balance it that, of course, they go haywire. Of course, they compare themselves to the fantasy of what they, how come he fucks that? I'm sure you had that before. So imagine how much more it would be magnified with social media.
It's terribly at the age. I was not happy at 16 or 17.
Did you get a lot of chicks in high school?
No, I was a late bloomer. Mm-hmm. I was a late bloomer, not until college. I was a late bloomer.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I'm really interested in this. So, because I guess back in that day, that was never, we didn't heard of that stuff back, like shooting up a school. It was more about back then of self-inflicting, like cutting school. Just not being good to yourself, like acting out, hanging out with kids that probably weren't
getting
the right
fights,
age. Yeah, exactly.
Drugs,
that.
Yeah.
But so it was interesting that the interplay of, so I think what you're saying is, and I agree with it, is that like what I felt back then, you walk through the school and you look at other kids, they look happier than you.
Exactly.
That's times a million now with social media,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
And
not only that, think about how many times on social media people are smiling when they don't fucking mean it.
Right.
Right? And they got a bunch of followers. And so now they're being like, oh, fuck, they're a happy couple. How come I'm dealing with this? Or my, you know, it's just, I think everything is just what it was before is just magnified now.
So was there a point where like, mm-hmm. Was there a part of you said, okay, I know I'm fantasizing, but I know I never would do it. Mm-hmm. Or do you actually really think like that if things got worse, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man. No, man, this is getting deep, dude. Shit, I'm sweating now. But
it's really
I was inching my way there. I don't know if I would have actually done it, to be honest with you. But man, I'm sure everybody, I'm sure maybe you had it too, where like maybe there were illegal things you did in the past that like maybe you didn't think about doing it, but just, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington syndrome. It's just you inch your way, and the more you're in it, the more you're like,
Is there like websites to go on for that shit, like with other people who are disgruntled?
I would just read books and study, like the Columbine shooters, all these other people. Why did they do it? What were they going through? I would watch their tapes. What do they say in the tapes? So I'm like, okay, cool. So I need to mail it to the news and then mail it to the school and then call the school. You know, I never did anything whatsoever.
But I would. It's a totally different thing thinking about it.
Yeah, totally.
But I think what's really interesting is to see, because then there's this other phase that some very few go through where they actually get to this point where they're going to act on it, right?
Yeah, had I been pushed.
What do you think it was that stopped you from taking a thought that I'm sure, as you said, probably a lot of kids have.
Yeah.
What was it was it your upbringing? Was it your respect for life? Was it
skateboarding?
Skateboarding. An activity.
Skateboarding. I put all my pain and frustration into that. And literally, I have a shirt even at home. Skateboarding saved my life.
Was there any way for someone at that time, if they would have known you, to realize that? Or was it impossible to spot?
No, I tried to hint at it. To be honest, I tried to hint at it because I wanted help. And I don't know if you've been in that situation where I would like tell my parents stuff like, oh, I wish I could kill people. Or literally, man, it got so bad that I would like see a bus and I would imagine, you know, just doing bad things to it. But it was out of my retaliation. Like, the world is so harsh to me. Fuck, I'm going to be harsh to it. I didn't have an empowering mental dialogue going on. At that time, one could say I was living authentically, but that authenticity of frustration and pissed offness was not taking me in the direction I want to go. And so I just got conscious of that, thank God. Skateboarding, honestly, man, skateboarding saved my fucking life.
Was it the activity or people that you met doing it, having camaraderie? Was it like, did it become like a whole bunch of people?
It became a way to channel my energy. See, I believe when people do destructive things, kind of, I'm sure you did it with drugs when you're making millions, tens of millions of dollars, you're looking for an escape to numb the reality. And the reality of my life was shit. But when I skateboarded, I could learn a flip trick. I could channel it into grinding down a stair set or a rail. And so I just got really into skateboarding. And honestly, had it not been for that, man, I don't think I would be in a good situation today, man. Honestly. So I think finding something healthy to channel it into, whether it's business or whatever, was the escape for me. Because if I just kept it inside, I would have just boiled up and that shit would have ate me alive. And
do your parents know this? Do your parents know about this?
They knew I was depressed at that time, never told them that. But they knew I was like reading books about serial killers. I was studying Ted Bundy, the Zodiac Killer. Like, I would read all the notes. I got so into, just became fascinated by it, man, honestly. And I just, at first it was like I could relate to their pain. I could relate to their frustration with society and their desire to take it out on them.
And was the fantasy that if you did it somehow, it would alleviate your pain?
Or that you knew that it would end your, did you
play it out like, this will end my life, and I'd rather have my life over than live in this pain? Like, you knew it was a death sentence for you as well?
It wasn't that well thought out. I just thought, they hurt me so fucking bad, I want to hurt them so fucking bad. And so when I would see couples happy, I would have just negative thoughts. It was a really negative cycle of shit. And keep in mind, I was like 16, 17.
What do you think about in terms of like, and this is, forget being pro or anti-gun.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think, like at that point, did you have access to firearms or could you have gotten them? Or would you?
Yeah. I could have gotten them very easy.
No matter what, right?
I had thought that part of it out.
What do you think the solution is that, like, if there is one, what do you, like how does a, you know, society, mm-hmm. schools, parents,
yeah.
politicians, if they have any influence mm-hmm. at all, what do you do about this? Because, like, it's a yeah. really interesting, because I'm really so glad you said this, because this is now really profound here. Like, mm-hmm. what do you do to stop? Like, how do you, yeah. Is there something that can be done right now?
Yeah. So in my opinion, the only thing you can do, you can create content online, you can do all this other stuff, and I think that stuff helps. But honestly, I think in-person conversations with kids about things like, and I know it's a little politically correct, but literally stuff about like the concept of fulfillment.
That's not political. No, that's not political. No, I get it.
You know, or like living out something that fulfills, helping other people, like passion, like... If you communicated to a kid, like imagine if there was a curriculum or a thing in schools where people habitually talk to kids once a month or once a week, just introduce the thought to them, just the spark of them, just somebody consciously said, hey,
an alternative.
Yeah, just stimulated it. I think that would have a phenomenal effect because now they have nobody's even introducing it to them. Nobody's, they're being raised by all their other kids in class. Imagine if there was a mandatory class once a week or some way that they mandatory had to be there. They couldn't scroll away. They couldn't look away. They didn't have the option to not look at it. Just like they have math, science, social studies, all the other shit they don't care about. Imagine if just they had a class or curriculum or something in person that was standardized countrywide or worldwide where people talked about the concept of like fulfillment or entrepreneurship. Or, you know, it's important to have a hobby, or this is why physical fitness is important. Just a healthy dialogue about like how you can act in ways that will improve the way you perceive things. Just introduce that to them. Now kids don't even have that. Or if they do, it's a little clip, you scroll, you forget about it 5 minutes later when you watch the next video. But something to just seed over and over and over in their mind that there are more things to life than getting money and being popular. Not that there's anything wrong with those things. You can go get it, but just introduce, because even if you have money and are popular, that alone is not going to fulfill you. You need other things.
Yeah. Do you think kids are generally cruel? Was a lot of the cruelty of other kids at that? Was a kid? Were you were kids being like really just cruel to you? Or you think? In retrospect, now that you can look at it through the eyes of an adult, right? How much of it was your own sort of misunderstanding what was going on, and how much of it was just kids being really mean to you?
Probably 80% of it was in my own head, the bullshit in my head. Oh, girls don't like me because I have a bunch of acne. Right. You know, oh, I couldn't make this soccer team. So, you know, fuck them, fuck sports. That's when I started smoking weed, started drinking, started trying other shit. Like it was just kind of me like trying to justify why things weren't working by making them the bad guy. And so as a result, I would just create this own torture in my own fucking head. I mean, they weren't that bad to me in particular. I know people had it way worse, but for me, it was my self-inflicted thing, and it was related to chicks, man. Because you know how it is, man. When you're a teenager, your entire self-worth is based upon how many chicks want to talk to you or hang out or whatever. Yeah,
I said to you, girls were my thing my whole life. I said to you, every problem, get it.
You were driven by that, yeah.
One more question here. What would you say? I mean, I'm sure mm-hmm. there'll be kids watching this because mm-hmm. I have a young audience too, right?
Yeah.
That may not be in that spot, but they're in that like sort of desperate, mm-hmm. hopeless space that you were in at a time, right? Yeah. I was in even, right? I'll admit that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, not quite as severe, but certainly for me, it felt pretty bad at the time, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say to like, you know, not so much to yourself, I hate that question. What would you say to your young self? I mean, like, what would you say to someone like that that's feeling like that right now at 17 years old? Mm-hmm. So they just feel like they don't fit in, they have no purpose, mm-hmm. and they feel like life's not sort of worth it. What would you say to them?
I would say, number one, congratulations for recognizing that you're in that spot, because a lot of people don't even get conscious of it. They start living as a victim of the emotions they feel, not realizing they could do something about it. So number one, I would say congratulations, pat yourself on the back for recognizing it. Second thing is take control of your life. And that, I know it sounds extreme, but I always tell people this who are depressed, who are lost, who are broke, or whatever, go out and try things fast. Go try a sales job. Go try a new sport. Go ask that girl. Just go try things. Go experiment with different things just as a way to channel your energy into something else. Go reach for something else that might be the thing you love, might be the thing that's your forte, might be what sales was to Jordan Belfort, might be that to young little Timmy or young little Amanda. Go out and try shit. You know, when we're kids, we go out and we try basketball and we try this sport and that sport and we try talking to little girls and we eat gummy bears and play video games, right? Where you experiment with all the shit, and then some people find their thing, some people don't. The difference is when a lot of people get older, they stop trying things and they think that because they're not fulfilled or because they're not in momentum or because their life's not working, that they're not working or they're broken. When in reality, they can go try different shit. And the reality is that if they're going through pain right now, you asked for, you know, my advice to them. If they're going through pain right now, it's probably because they're not trying something or playing the highest game they can because they don't even know it. They never tried it. They never tried that thing. They never tried that sport. You know, for me, one day I saw this whole podcast, even my confidence to even start a podcast came because I was in that spot. I was depressed again in college. Like I don't want another shitty job making 50 grand a year or whatever. Like, I don't want that. I want to do something bigger. I know I'm meant for more. So I would just go out and try things. I'd try a boxing class, tried it for a day. Okay, didn't like it. Go try yoga. Okay, kind of liked it, but not really. Okay, go, let me try. Okay, my buddy has an internet radio show. Fuck it, let me try it. Hey, what's up, dude? Could I try out? Could I come to your radio show sometime? He's like, oh, I don't know. I was like, what if I paid you, right? You know, money convinces people pretty quick. And he was like, okay, fine. So I went and I would pay him to host a radio show. So I developed a little bit of like a confidence on the mic. So then 2 or 3 years later, when I would start the podcast, I had a little bit of experience from that. Had I not tried that, I might have not had the confidence to start a podcast. Had I not started a podcast, I wouldn't have reached amazing people. Had I not done that, I wouldn't have built a business. Had I not done that, I wouldn't be here today.
I got to say, you know, you taught me something today, which is I really appreciate, because I had this, for some reason, I sensed there was more to you than what you were saying. Because I just, you seem like a really deep, intelligent young guy, but I had a, I just sensed there was something under there. No, because like you're,
I appreciate that.
You're driven, but you were talking about revenge. I thought it was more, and I'm glad it just taught me to make sure I always kind of don't let, I'm like a dog with a bone. I had a feeling there was something there with you. And I think that's really what, I respect you 1,000 times more right now. Mm-hmm. Than I did 20 minutes ago. I bet every single person in this room feels exactly the same way.
I never shared anything like that.
Well, it's amazing, even, you know, because honestly, you help other people. And also, I think it makes you stronger, too, to look back at your... I know every time I do that, when I got clean with my own insanity, it makes you stronger, you know?
That's
You're
right.
You're an awesome guy. I want everybody to find out more about you. Tell me the best ways that people can see your stuff, learn from you, grow from you. What are they?
Absolutely, yeah. So you guys can check out the YouTube channel at The Passionate Few. You can find me on Instagram at Omar, O-M-A-R, underscore Elatar, E-L-A-T-T-A-R. The podcast on Spotify. And other than that, those are pretty much our major platforms.
And I will make commit to come on your podcast as well. I will for sure, buddy.
Thank you so much.
Listen, guys, wow, that was more than I bargained for. I'm like a little choked up. No, seriously, because... I think it takes a lot of courage to do what you just did.
Thank you.
Even though it was in the past, but I think it makes you much more compelling to listen to. And now it makes me understand what your success is about. It really does.
Pain is power.
Pain is power.
And I tell my coaching clients that.
You flip the switch on it now. And it's also where your empathy comes from and your understanding of other people. Because I think most people have felt like that at many times in their life. So
true to some
good
degree,
on you, pal.
Absolutely.
Thanks for
coming. Thank you so much, Jordan. Right, appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.